Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
So what we're seeing right now is this insatiable, unbridled corporate capitalism that has taken democracy hostage. And we see it clearly that it has happened in Greece. We see it clearly how they are fighting any country that shows any kind of independent desire to exert their sovereignty, wish to have an alternative sort of economics that isn't, you know, this bridled, unbridled capitalism.
That's the voice of sociologist Maria Paez. In this show, we speak to Maria about how global policy of austerity is driven by ideology, not economic principles.
I'm Sylvia Richardson, and I'm joined by Dr. Maria Paez Victor. She's a Canadian Venezuelan sociologist. Very privileged to have you on our program. How are you, Maria?
Hello, Sylvia. It's a pleasure to be on your program again.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us. We've been talking about power and the kind of, ecologies that we create through power, the kind of political power that we can exert as people. So I wonder if we could start by talking a little bit about the current economic war that we see. In essence, you know, the economic collapse is just one manifestation of the capitalist system's failures, and there are many. But the kinds of policies that are in place are not equally distributed. So austerity, for instance, for the Greek and people in, you know, in countries like Portugal, Spain, is very different than the kind of austerity that's being imposed on Canadians or Americans. So could we begin by talking a little bit about this economic war?
Yes, we have to step back a bit and try and see the broad picture of where capitalism is right now. Capitalism has survived through the decades because it has the ability to sort of change. We all know about the Industrial Revolution in England, how it started, and all the manufacturing and all the sort of creative things that happened there created a system whereby goods and services were being created at an incredible speed and with lower prices. So that's sort of industrial capitalism, but we're not there anymore. The capitalist elites aren't interested in industry, in manufacturing. They are interested in finance capitalism, and that is because we are in the era of corporate capitalism. And this means that they're very interested in the financial casino. Really, this is what it is, you know, putting money here, putting money there, the internationalization of money, which they call globalization. Capital has become very mobile, so you can change money, put money in one country, and in just a click of the computer, that money is at the other side of the world. And, of course, the casino of investments, okay? So that's the broader picture. Now, what happens with capitalism? Capitalism, by nature, by its very, very profound structure, requires continual growth. They have to keep on growing. You have to keep on making profits and more profits and more profits. So they reached a point basically around the 1980s, that one of the ways in which they could grow is to take away any venture that governments had. So they invented privatization. And in order to do that, it came the idea that everything that was state-run was bad, was inefficient, ineffective. Government should not be doing that. So they wanted to shrink the economic role of of government. And they started doing this in Latin America, by the way, in the 1980s. Now they're doing it to Europe, but it's exactly the same thing. Now, this doesn't mean the shrinking of the state, because although they wanted to privatize all state assets, they wanted to shrink government services, they also wanted to increase the government powers of control. That means more police, more military, more wars, more prison, etc. So it's not true that they wanted less government. They just wanted less of certain parts of government, and they wanted more of the other. So that is the broader picture. In order to carry out this need for more growth and more profits, they are, in effect, and this is the really dangerous thing, they are attacking democracy everywhere. You know, that what the people want is irrelevant. You may remember on the verge of the war on Iraq, millions of people all over the world, there were marches. Yeah, I think in every capital in Europe, there were marches here, everywhere, people saying, don't go to war, don't go to war. Well, it got nowhere. You know, they went to war, they destroyed Iraq, right? So we are seeing now a change. It used to be that the theory, that the rhetoric was in capitalism sort of spurred democracy. That, you know, in order to have a democracy, you have to have capitalism. Some fools still believe this. Now what we are seeing is that unbridled corporate capitalism is in fact a direct threat to democracy. Look what we have seen just last week. The people of Greece rejected the austerity measures of the Troika, the European Union, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, with an overwhelming result. This was a landslide that hasn't been seen, I think, in half a century in Europe. That there hasn't been any election anywhere that has shown this tremendous landslide. Well, the very next day, the government of Greece, the actual government of Greece, went back on that referendum and has actually presented to the people an austerity program that's even worse than the one that they rejected in a democratic referendum. This is outrageous. This is a government saying, we don't care what the people say, we're going to do what these unelected and increasingly unresponsive bureaucrats in Brussels say that Greece has to have.
And you know, when I looked at the news, first of all, the vote was, as you say, momentous, because it was a monumental win for the people. They actually voted no, and in spite of all the fear-mongering, the vote still went no, and it was a clear rejection of austerity. And then the hashtag on July 14th was, this is a coup. This is a coup. And so I wonder if we can talk a little bit about that, because for us in Latin America, economic warfare has been something that is almost of an everyday nature. We saw it happen in Honduras in 2009. We've seen it happen to Venezuela on several occasions. And so we've seen it happen throughout Latin America. Anytime a government makes even minor reforms that benefit the people, that, you know, that try to redistribute wealth in ways that are more equitable, you see these kinds of intervention. And economic warfare, when you really look at it, means the collapse of your entire financial system, which is what they did. And they still did, by the way, in spite of the government taking on the austerity package. Now there is more bleeding being asked of them. So I wonder if you could maybe contrast the situation in Greece, which what has happened in the past with Venezuela, because because this here is perhaps one of the few examples that we have where the people are moving in a different direction other than the capitalist, this unbridled capitalism that you've described.
Well, from the very first election of Hugo Chavez as president of Venezuela, the United States and all its allies have been dead against Venezuela, because Venezuela traced, first of all, exerted its own sovereignty, said, we are in an independent country. We're not going to be taking orders from anybody. A few years later, I think it was 2000, and the election of 2005, President Chavez said to the people, look, the way to go is towards this socialism, this new socialism of the 21st century that is eminently democratic, humanistic, inclusive, etc. And, well, that was even worse. So they've been against it. But Venezuela is not the first, as you well say. In 1973, when Allende was the president of Chile, the United States famously, Nixon was in the White House, and his right-hand man was Kissinger, and they said, we are going to make Chile scream. So before they did the coup and killed Allende, the whole year before that was economic war. Exactly what they're doing to Venezuela. The food was warehoused, and people were hiding. You know, the industry were hiding things. They manipulated the money. You know, the currency. Just a few months ago, I saw the newsreels from Chile. I saw this video where they were showing you the newsreels of Chile just before Allende fell. And, you could have easily said that it was Venezuela. That was what Nixon said. We're going to make Chile scream because we are going to attack it first economically. And so that was wishful thinking of that then the opposition was saying, see, we have to get rid of Allende because the economy isn't working. But, of course, the economy wasn't working because of all these underhand things that they were doing. And then, of course, then came the coup and the tragic end of Allende. Well, this is what they're trying to do in Venezuela right now. This terrible economic war against the country. Look, you have to consider that Venezuela has most of the distribution of foods and goods is in private hands. It is in fact a mixed economy. It's not a socialist economy. They want it to be socialist, but it's not yet. And so this is in the hands of the private sector. But it's a private sector that its leaders are immensely rich. They are so rich that their money isn't in Venezuela. The most richest people in Venezuela, their money is in Switzerland somewhere, or in places like that. So they don't really care if people say, oh, well, they want to make money. If they lose money, they don't care. Their money is just elsewhere. So we have to look at it as a pincer movement. First, they do this economic war, and at the same time, they're trying to undermine the countries. They're trying to undermine Venezuela, Ecuador, Bolivia, Brazil, even Nicaragua. All of these countries have these underhand things that are happening right now. Because the government of the United States wants to continue having its hegemony, and it's seen that it isn't there. Right now, for example, one of the things they want to do, and this is almost openly said, they want to destroy Latin American integration. Now, the Latin American integration is this dream of Bolivar, in which Venezuela has been, admitting that Venezuela is a leader in this, because it was the one that proposed that we should have UNASUR, which is the Organization for the Defense of Latin America, CELAC, which has definitely substituted the Organization of American States, Mercosur, which was changed radically from being just a commerce organization to one in which they are actually cooperating to help the development of each of all the countries. And then Petrocaribe, which Venezuela did in order to provide oil to all these poor island countries of the Caribbean for whom the buying of oil was very hard. So all of these things is the Latin American integration. Now contrast this to the European Union. The issue of Greece is politically, well, economically disastrous for Greece and terrible. But one of the things that it shows is that the European Union is no such thing as a union. What it is has been a consolidation of European banks. They are not into cooperative and solidarity and helping the countries develop. No, they have put democracy in peril. They don't care what the people say. It's the Brussels bureaucrats and the, especially the ministers of finance and the minister of the banks who are unaccountable. No one has ever elected them. And these finance ministers are the ones who are really seeking the big bucks for the European corporations. And it doesn't matter what the people want. What are they asking? They're asking for austerity measures. What's the austerity measures? The austerity measures is a cut to the government services. Now, a report has just come out, and there are many of them, but this latest report, which is announced in Zero Hedge, it's a statistical analysis that shows a direct correlation between cuts in public services and political instability. The greater the cuts, the greater the instability events. So a 5% cut in GDP, for example, will create at least three conflicts per year. The economists of the world, the great economists of the world, have been telling the European Bank and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank that austerity is counterproductive. Now, they're basing themselves on the ideas of Keynes. Keynes was a great economist. Came to prominence after the Second World War, where the countries were, you know, destroyed. And what did he say? He said, "You've got to put money in the economy."
I want to bring you back to one point that you make because I think it's super important, and then that is that of instability. You know, I mean, we in North America we are presented with the idea that there are certain countries that are just violent. You know, there are people that are just violent. Colombia, you know, El Salvador. These people are, you know, they're just violent. But the truth is, as you point out, the more you bleed a country, the more you take away from its domestic gross product, you know, to their GDP, pay odious debts, the more you create that kind of instability. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the connection between all this instability and violence on the streets and the connection to the economic warfare that we face.
Well, the first thing I want to say is that obviously no one wants violence. So any kind of violence is not something that you want in any society. So I'm not advocating that. But what I am saying is that when you have an instability event, it's looked at as instability from the powers that be, you know. But from the other side, it's a fight for your rights. So you have trade union strikes. Well, that may count as instability. Oh, the workers of X company or whatever have gone out on strike. That is an instability event. But from their point of view, they are standing up for their jobs. They're standing up for their rights. So what we have here is a war on the people, and for the sake of supposed stability. But the cuts affect people in their ordinary everyday life. Take a look at what's happening right now in terms of unemployment, youth unemployment. Youth unemployment in Spain is 50%. That means 50% of the youth have no employment. In Greece, it's the same, 49%. In Italy, it's 42%. In Portugal, 32%. In the UK, a little bit less, 15%. But on average, of the 28 European countries, their youth unemployment is 20%. Now, this is huge. This is huge. So I come back to the point of what economists have been said. You know, people like Krugman, who's a liberal, who writes in New York Times, saying this is not the time to cut back on government spending. You have to spend in order to get out of this. This is what Keynes said after the Second World War. Countries blown up, you know, rubble. And what did he say? The government has to spend, not impose, austerity. So what we have here is an ideology. So you have the European Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank not even looking at economic theory, economic principles, but insisting on this right-wing ideology that is we have to cut government services because these people, you know, they should stand up on their own, and we should shrink these government services. We should sell anything that the state has as an asset and sell it to the private sector. Now, that is an ideology. It is not backed by any kind of empirical study or even economic principles. So what we're seeing right now is this insatiable, unbridled corporate capitalism that has taken democracy hostage. And we see it clearly that it has happened in Greece. We see it clearly how they are fighting any country that shows any kind of independent desire to exert their sovereignty, wish to have an alternative sort of economics that isn't, you know, this bridled, unbridled capitalism. That is the message. What they wanted to do was to destroy Syriza, and they did. They wanted to bring down that government, Syriza, and for all intents and purposes, they have. And I can only predict, sadly, that what we will see in Greece is an increased sorrow for the Greek people and increased instability, if you like. I would say there will be, further protest by the people.
We've come to the end of our program. We have less than 50 seconds. To the people of Canada, what would you say in response to the rabid government that we are facing as well? Because we face similar threats to our democracy in this country.
Well, I would say that go out and vote in the next election and do not vote these people in because they have hoodwinked Canadians. This is one of the richest countries in the world. They hoodwinked them into saying that we have to have austerity here. They have shrunk government services for people. Child poverty has increased. The economy isn't doing any well. They have.
We have to leave it there. But
okay.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you for your beautiful contribution. Take care.
Bye-bye.
To all your listeners, I am Sylvia Richardson. That was my guest, Dr. Maria Paez. We'll see you next week. We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.